You're listening to KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me. Some of you may well remember spending your mornings reading the funny pages, the comic strips, in your local newspaper. The range of the comic strip was as vast as television. There were cartoon character strips like Popeye and Donald Duck. There were humor strips, Peanuts, Beetle Bailey, The Wizard of Id, and BC, situation comedy in Blondie or Dennis the Menace or The Family Circus, political satire in Pogo or Little Abner, soap opera strips like Mary Worth or Brenda Starr or Little Orphan Annie. There was The Phantom, Flash Gordon, and Buck Rogers, and adventure strips like Steve Canyon, Terry and the Pirates, and Dick Tracy. And there was the most lavish strip of them all, Prince Valiant. The comic strip was a popular culture force that few people remember today. Many of the creators of these strips, writers and illustrators, lived within a few miles of each other in a corner of Connecticut. One of those artists was John Cullen Murphy, a superb illustrator who created an adventure strip about a boxer named Big Ben Bolt. Murphy then became the artist of Prince Valiant, and for a quarter of a century, the strip was written by John Cullen Murphy's son, Cullen Murphy. Cullen Murphy is now editor-at-large of Vanity Fair magazine. He's the author of several books and has just published Cartoon County, My Father and His Friends in the Golden Age of Make-Believe. Cullen Murphy, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
I really loved this book. It was so much fun to read, and it's a beautiful book with wonderful illustrations, and getting to know you and your father and the scene that they lived in was just wonderful. This is great.
Well, thank you. And I would just add one thing, since people on the radio are not, you know, by definition, seeing the book.
I'm holding it up to the microphone.
The publisher is did just a marvelous job with the illustrations. You know, there's about 150 of them. And too bad holding it up to the microphone doesn't work.
No.
But I couldn't be more pleased with the job that they did presenting the work of so many wonderful artists.
There's a marvelous photograph in the center of the cover of the book of your father dressed in strange garb. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, he was often... you often could find him dressed in strange garb because, you know, I did a rough calculation once, just trying to figure out how many human figures he drew in the two comic strips that he did. You know, one was Big Ben Bolt about a prize fighter, and the other was Prince Valiant about a knight of the Round Table. And it's probably upwards of 100,000 human figures. So one of the things that he did just to help himself a little bit was he would pose for himself and take pictures with a Polaroid camera. It was actually one of the things I had to do after school, was take pictures of him. And this meant that he would, you know, when he was doing a prize fighting strip, he'd be there in his boxer shorts and, you know, with boxing gloves and doing all sorts of things. And then when he was doing Prince Valiant, he'd be wearing a woman's wig to get that old-fashioned hair, and he'd have a sword, and he'd be dressed in a, you know, skirt, and he looked ridiculous. And I have, you know, thousands of these Polaroids. They're a real treasured possession. They span a period of 50 years.
Wow. And you're in some of them as well.
Yeah, I'm a reluctant participant. You know, from time to time, and so are my brothers and sisters. I'm one of eight children. And from time to time, you know, the strip called for somebody who was younger, you know, a kid. So that meant that, you know, one of us would be called from the house to come and also dress up as something that looked, you know, preposterous. And I don't think any of us really liked doing it. I remember once there was an episode about an orphaned kid from India. And I had to put a diaper around my head as a turban. And I was probably around 8 years old. And, you know, not the happiest moment.
Well, you know, the modern world and all of our technology has brought us many wonderful things, but it's also diminished many wonderful things that were a big part of our childhoods, yours and mine, when we would, especially on Sunday, sit down with the funny papers and get into that wonderful world that, you know, I never even thought about. I never thought about a guy taking pictures. I never even thought about anybody drawing it. It was just this part of the paper. It was just a wonderful part of the paper. And I remember Prince Valiant very well, but I also remember never reading Prince Valiant because it was just too many words. I like to look at the pictures. I like to look at the pictures, but it was a very wordy strip. And I didn't read a lot of the adventure strips that, you know, Steve Canyon and so forth. I was much more interested in Peanuts and the comic ones and Beetle Bailey and so forth. And there were, of course, two different... Yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles, so there was the Los Angeles Times, and they had one set of funnies, and there was the Los Angeles Herald Examiner, and they had a whole different set of comic strips that I loved, and my grandmother got that paper on Sunday, so I used to go over and read her.
That's right. It depended on who the syndicate was, and, you know, different newspaper chains controlled different syndicates. So, as you've just pointed out, different newspapers would have different Sunday comics. But remember how glorious they were? You know, when you think about it, on Sunday, the Sunday newspaper, and this was the time when most people got a Sunday newspaper, the Sunday newspaper would come wrapped in the comics. It wasn't like the news section would be on the outside wrapping up the comics. It was the other way around because the newspaper publishers knew what would sell and what would attract attention. Some of these comic supplements were 16 pages on a Sunday. You know, there are some newspapers that aren't even 16 pages these days. So 16 pages, and there were big broadsheet-sized pages. You had something like 65 or 70 square feet of comics on a Sunday morning. I mean, this was just glorious. And the color was good, and there were always more funny strips than adventure strips. And the adventure strips were the ones that I think really first became the victims of things like, you know, radio, serials, and television. And the funny strips had other qualities that have kept them more vital for a longer period of time.
I also thought the adventure strips, I know this sounds ridiculous now, but I thought the adventure strips were for adults because, you know, because I couldn't follow them as well. And my mom and dad both read them and discussed what Al Capp was doing in Little Abner or Mary Worth or whatever. So I thought, well, I'm not old enough to...
Well, the nice thing about funnies, you know, the comics, was that it actually was all for adults and for kids. And how many, you know, how many mass media are there today that are as universal as the comics were in their heyday? It's actually hard to pinpoint one. You know, media is so fragmented. Audiences are, you know, carved into niches. And but in their prime, you know, in the middle of the 20th century, the funny pages in the newspapers were reaching, you know, the Sunday papers sold more copies than there were households in America. That just tells you something about the reach that these creations had.
In your book, you talked about how a newspaper did an experiment where they kept leaving out various sections of the paper.
Yes, right. And I think it was King Features did this experiment. You know, they for 1,000 households, they one week they decided they would leave out, you know, quote unquote, accidentally, the news section of the newspaper, and they got like 40 complaints. And next week they left out the comics section, and they got 800 complaints.
The comics were important.
People had their priorities clear, if not straight.
Well, in addition to your marvelous new book, Cartoon County, My Father and His Friends in the Golden Age of Make-Believe, a few years ago you wrote an introduction to a collection of your father's wonderful strip, Big Ben Bolt. And I read this, and I found this to be, and I didn't read it when it was originally published. I read it now. But I found it to be one of the most entertaining stories in any medium that I've ever read. It's beautifully drawn, and it's totally involving, and the characters are so interesting. Tell us a little bit about Big Ben Bolt.
Sure. Big Ben Bolt was a strip that my father signed up to draw, I guess it was around 1950 or 51. It was one of the last two strips that William Randolph Hearst personally signed off on. And the other one was Beetle Bailey, and done by Mort Walker, who passed away just last week at the age of 94. And Big Ben Bolt was written by Elliot Kaplan, who was the brother of Al Capp. It gets to be a very small world very quickly. And Elliot Kaplan was a wonderful, wonderful fellow, a real gentleman, and he did a number of strips. But this one was about a prize fighter, and he was not your usual prize fighter. When you think of the, where prize fighters, tend to come from, if you think about movies and novels and such, well, this was a prize fighter who, lived on Beacon Hill in Boston Brahmin territory, had gone to Harvard. He was an Ivy League heavyweight champion. We have Ivy League quarterbacks, but Ivy League heavyweight prize fighting champions are not falling off trees. And he had this dotty aunt and uncle who took care of him. Interspersed with his fighting career, which of course could only last for a while, he was also a journalist, and he was a detective, and he just got himself into all sorts of scrapes and adventures. But it was a beautifully drawn strip. The reason that Elliot Kaplan had been drawn to my father in the first place was because he'd seen a lot of the illustrations that he was doing for magazines like Sport. I think Sports was one of my dad's great loves, and it was really the way he began his career. He was doing programs for Madison Square Garden.
Wow. And do you have a lot of those around? Do you still have them?
I have some, and I've also got programs that he did for the Boston Red Sox.
Mm.
And I've got things that he did for New Rochelle High School. You can imagine how much they fetch on eBay. And we've got a lot of. I've got a beautiful, beautiful painting that he did of John L. Sullivan when my dad was probably about 19 years old. Really an extraordinary piece of work. He was a very fine illustrator in a way that comes through to some extent in Prince Valiant, but really comes through if you look at the illustrations and paintings that he did during the war. And as you know, there's an entire chapter that's devoted to his wartime work.
In Big Ben Bolt, Big Ben Bolt has a girlfriend named Charity, and she's so beautifully drawn. I have a crush on her, frankly.
She was beautiful, but I will have to say that there was a period of time when the women in Big Ben Bold became even more beautiful, and that was a three-week period around 1960 or 61, and collectors of strips could probably pinpoint exactly when this is because they pay attention to this stuff, but my father got pneumonia. And he couldn't do the strip, and he was in the hospital. And Stan Drake, who did The Heart of Juliet Jones, just out of fraternal assistance, I think, and a kind of love for my dad. He did Big Ben Bolt for my father during those 3 weeks. It was a very common thing, cartoonists stepping in and doing strips for other people when, you know, there was some mishap. And Stan was, he drew the most beautiful women. He had taught himself to draw by copying movie stills from Hollywood films. And so, you know, thousands of times he would you know, draw Rita Hayworth and all sorts of other people. So he could not draw a woman who was not beautiful. And so I think during those 3 weeks that Stan stepped in, it was probably, you know, the peak of beauty in the strip.
I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf on KSCO, and we are chatting with Cullen Murphy. His new book is called Cartoon County, My Father and His Friends in the Golden Age of Make-Believe. Cullen Murphy's father was John Cullen Murphy, a cartoonist for newspaper comic strips. He had two adventure strips. One was called Big Ben Bolt, and the other was The Great Prince Valiant. And Cullen Murphy, for 25 years, was the writer alongside his father on Prince Valiant. And when we left off, we were talking with Cullen Murphy, who's the author of a new book called Cartoon County, My Father and His Friends in the Golden Age of Make-Believe, about Big Ben Bolt. But Cullen Murphy, your father left Big Ben Bolt to take over drawing Prince Valiant, is that right?
That's correct. Yes, that was around 1970, and Hal Foster, a real master illustrator, as you know, very much in the tradition of, well, you know, his heroes would have been people like Howard Pyle and J.C. Leyendecker, just as my father's heroes were, you know, were those same people. They drew on the same tradition. And Hal had started Prince Valiant in the 30s, and by around 1970, he was getting a little bit arthritic and wanted to give up the drawing. So he knew my father's work, and he asked my dad to take over just the drawing. And so now here was a case where you wanted to have as seamless a transition as possible. And, you know, it's not like, you know, at some television show where you're replacing, you know, one major character with somebody completely different and hoping it works. You don't want that. And so my father was very careful to work with Hal closely in order to get the style down right, and the characters, and just the general feel of the strip. And I think it was very successful. Hal would, at the outset, would send my father sketches, you know, to give him, you know, layouts for the pages. He stopped that after several years. And but yes, it was very much at first a case of my father just trying to carry on Hal's work up to the standard that Hal would have expected. And over time, of course, my father's own style became somewhat more prominent, but it was very gradual.
Well, was that frustrating for an artist like your father, John Cullen Murphy, to have to sort of push his own style down a little bit?
Not at all. He admired Hal Foster tremendously. Every one of the sketches that that Hal sent to my father saved, which gives you an indication of how much he valued the input. And the fact is, you know, my father and Hal saw themselves as part of, you know, a very similar tradition, going back to, you know, great illustrators. You know, N.C. Wyeth would be another one. So it's not as if you were suddenly, you know, yanking your basic your basic style into something that was totally unknown to you. It was more a case of adapting something, you know, to a style of someone with whom you already had a lot in common.
It's very different than comic books, where, you know, when Neil Adams started to draw Batman, you know, or John Romita started to draw Spider-Man, they drew them completely differently than the artists who had preceded them.
Yes, that is true, and you know, I don't really have an explanation for that, and it may partly be that strips are more continuous in a certain way over time, and they're expected to be a little bit more unchanging. Whereas comic books, you know, there's the word books in the very title. You know, when new ones come out, they are new creations. So I think there's more leeway in that field.
So what's so remarkable about these strips, whether they're the week, Prince Valiant was only on Sunday, right?
That's right.
And Big Ben Bolt, which was every day. So they've got like three or four panels, and in those three or four panels, they have to let you know what's already happened. They have to move the story forward and also end it in a way that will make you want to read it tomorrow.
Right.
That seems impressive.
It's a neat trick, isn't it? When you know, from time to time, people have asked what the hardest thing was about starting to write Prince Valiant, which I did, and I began helping Hal in the mid-70s, and then I took over the writing in 1979 and worked with my father, did all the writing for the next 25 years. But the hardest thing was what you have just pointed out, which was the sheer economy that is necessary to accomplish those objectives with a number of words that could not exceed, you know, a certain limit. And it was, you know, so it was a matter of, you know, you would write something and then you would pare it down and you'd see if you could pare it down even further. What's the most that you can say with the least amount of words while accomplishing three or four things that had to be accomplished in addition to whatever was going on with the plot? And it's, yeah, probably most readers of comic strips don't stop to think about that as a challenge, but it's a real challenge, and it's not just a challenge for adventure strips. You know, the mandate of economy is present for, you know, funny strips too.
Now, Prince Valiant was a unique strip among newspaper comic strips, in that there were no balloons, nobody spoke or thought. It was all written down below or above in boxes. And you started writing it, and you had to do it, obviously, in that style. Did you ever want to do it in the other way?
Never. The stylistic approach that you've just described has great advantages. I didn't realize what they were at first, but Hal Foster explained them to me. There was a moment when I was just starting to give Hal some ideas, and you know, at first I would just write out, you know, plot summaries for him, you know, as if I was giving you you know, the plot summary of Game of Thrones or something. And he would look at the plots and he'd say, yep, there's a good idea here, and I'll take this plot and I'll do it myself. But then eventually he agreed to let me try to do the strip the way he did it, which is, you know, with the actual words broken down into panels. And I tried my hand at it, and I remember having dinner with him after I'd sent him the first full set of stories in which I had tried to do this, and he told me that it was, you know, completely unsuccessful. He didn't mince words. He said, no good. You know, it just nearly floored me. He was in Lobster Newberg, and I was just a, you know, a nervous 25-year-old or 27-year-old or whatever I was. And but then he went on to explain what the problem was, and but also what the great advantage was that I was missing. And it was this: when you have a strip where you have speech balloons or thought balloons, the words are necessarily tied to what is happening in that panel. You know, you can't have somebody in a panel saying something that actually applies to something that's, you know, two panels earlier or three panels later. But when you have text that's running along the bottom, the picture in the text can function like a 1-2 punch in a very different manner. You can see the picture, you know, the text can allude briefly to the picture, but then give you additional information. And then you move on from that to the next picture, and your imagination does the leap from the text to the picture, and it keeps going on and on like that, and it allows you to accomplish a great deal that you wouldn't be able to accomplish as briefly as you could if you had to use speech balloons or thought balloons.
Most comic strips in each panel have two or three or one character, and there's a little bit of background because you usually see the characters from their shoulders up. There's almost always close-ups, sometimes long shots or medium shots. But Prince Valiant has got like, first of all, it takes the whole page, but you've also got like, you know, like 600 people in a panel.
There are lots of people. I'm sitting here right now looking at one that's hanging on the wall. If I could put my phone up to it or put the microphone up to it, your listeners could see that there literally are about 50 characters in this one strip. And sometimes there are battle scenes where there are more. It's a very populous strip. You can see why he wanted to take all those Polaroid pictures. You can also see why, if you look at my dad's originals, his face shows up an awful lot of times.
And what about yours? Can you find yourself in there?
I would often pose for Prince Arn, who was Prince Valiant's son. And so I suppose there's a highly idealized version of myself in some of those pictures, but really, no, not so much me. But my dad is everywhere, and partly because he looked like our idea of a medieval person. You know, as he got older, he had he looked like Don Quixote, and he had a beard and a mustache, and so he just fit the part. And you know, I've got one original. It's one of those strips where instead of dividing it into, you know, seven or eight panels, there are actually only two panels on the top, and then the rest of the strip is given over to one huge poster-sized picture. And it's a picture of a tribe of barbarians who are moving from one place to another, just migrating. And they're in carts or riding horses or walking or whatever. And my father must appear there 30 times.
Little did we know. Did he often bring animals there? And did he have animals at your house, or horses or whatever?
Well, In the picture that I'm just referring to, I swear that some of the oxen look like my father too, but no, we didn't have actual animals. But if you go through the Polaroid pictures, you know, you'll find him sitting on a wooden sawhorse, and you know, just instead of a regular horse, and but he would go and clip things relentlessly. One of my one of my vivid memories of him in the evenings is he'd have a stack of magazines and newspapers, and you know, he'd be sitting watching the news or something and thumbing through all these publications and just ripping out pictures of things that he might find useful. So he would have files of things like cows, goats, horses, and so when he needed something, you know, he had this bank of filing cabinets with all kinds of subject matter, you know, suits of armor, guns, really almost anything, women's hats.
I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf on KSCO, and we're talking with Cullen Murphy. His father, John Cullen Murphy, was the illustrator of the great comic strip Prince Valiant, and for 25 years, Cullen Murphy was the author of that strip that his father drew. And Cullen Murphy is now the author of a book, and it's called Cartoon County, My Father and His Friends in the Golden Age of Make-Believe. Well, it would think that it would be less work to just draw a Sunday strip than to do a daily strip, but I think when you look at the detail in Prince Valiant, that must have been a lot of work. How long did it take to create each one, and also when you were writing the strip, how far in advance did you have to write your story?
Well, we were generally about 12 weeks in advance, and it pretty much took Dad the entire week to do a strip. Probably if you got a scientist or a chemist or someone and you just analyze the amount of ink that is used in a typical Prince Valiant original, and listeners may not know that these originals are very large. They're about 2 feet wide and 3 feet high, and so the amount of ink used in each one of those, you know, is probably the equivalent to the amount of ink used in, you know, 12 of the, you know, 12 Beetle Baileys, for instance. They're extremely detailed, and it was a legacy of that illustrator tradition from the teens and 20s and 30s that meant so much to my father.
Charles Schulz drew like four circles, and the thing was done.
Yes, but they were very brilliant ones.
Indeed. So you in your book, and it's called again Cartoon County, My Father and His Friends in the Golden Age of Make Believe. You tell us about your neighborhood and about how you just lived in this world of people who drew cartoons.
Well, that's in a way. The genesis of the book, I realized as I was writing it that it is, you know, it is primarily a memoir of my father. But I came to it kind of through the back door, through the realization that the community in which I grew up was highly unusual, very remarkable, and it was gone. And there probably were about 100 cartoonists who lived, you know, within a 30 or 40 mile radius of us, and we saw them all the time. They socialized with one another. It's people like, you know, Mort Walker, who did Beetle Bailey, and Dick Brown, who did Hago the Horrible, and Stan Drake, who did The Heart of Juliet Jones, Leonard Starr, who did Little Orphan Annie, Ted Shearer, who did Quincy, Crockett Johnson, probably everybody knows Harold in the Purple Crayon, in that great children's book, but also did a strip called Barnaby, Ernie Bushmiller, who did Nancy, Chuck Saxon, the great New Yorker cartoonist. I mean, I'm not gonna just give you a long, long list, but that's a sampler of the kinds of people who were living in this, you know, general neighborhood, and who were part of a pretty close-knit group of creative artists.
And they had kids, and you guys played with their kids and stuff like that?
Exactly, and in some cases, people carried on the family business. The children of Mort Walker continue to be involved in Beetle Bailey and High and Lois. The sons of Dick Brown were involved in Hagar the Horrible and in High and Lois. And there are many other examples of families remaining involved in comic strips. It's something that reminded me a little bit of a medieval guild. I realize this is probably the second time I've used the word medieval. Something about Prince Valiant must have rubbed off on me. But there's something wonderful about working in the same realm as a parent. And that is an experience that used to be nearly universal. You know, if you think about 1,000 or 2,000 years ago, almost everybody was doing what their parents did and throughout their lives. And nowadays, it's exceedingly rare. And, Prince Charles will do what his parents did. And there are a number of other occupations where it's...
George W. Bush followed in his father.
Yes, exactly. There's a few occupations, probably organized crime. But there aren't, there aren't a lot. But comic strips is one where it happened, fairly frequently. And I like that about it.
Do you think if not for Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and the death of newspapers, you think you would still be doing it? Would you have continued on if...
When my father died, it really seemed the right time for me to close the chapter on that part of my life. And the attraction to the work itself was twofold. One part was simply that it was marvelous to have the chance to tell a great story. But the bigger part was that it was even more marvelous to have a chance to work with your father for a long period of time. I talked to him probably every day for 25 years. There's probably a lot of parents are thinking, boy, I wish my kids would talk to me every day. But I had good reason to do it, and they weren't just conversations about work. So when he passed away in 2004, it seemed a natural thing to do to give it up, and it has passed into other hands and continues to thrive.
Do you ever think, I've got a great idea for Prince Valiant?
I do occasionally, I've fortunately been able to turn my attention to some other writing projects that have occupied my time, including this book, which certainly allowed me to relive aspects of it in a very vivid way. You know, an interesting thing, I don't know whether you've had this experience, Gary, but when you're trying to think back on your personal past, and you really focus hard on it. You pick a moment or you pick a place, and you try to think about it very, very deeply and in detail. You find that after a few minutes, bits and pieces start flooding back that you had not thought about for maybe 30 or 40 years. For instance, when I would think about my father's studio, what it was like in the late afternoon on a winter's day when he had the television on, and I could hear him drawing, and his brush splashing in the water. And as I began, starting to remember those details, many more details began to come to the fore. And then suddenly it was kind of like a flood of all of these memories that I just had no recollection of. And then suddenly they were back there. And it was a wonderful experience to be able to reconnect with the past in a way that was so vivid.
And this book is found a wide audience, but I imagine that your siblings, who really like this book, what was their reaction been?
Well, I think in the history of books about families, there's a fork in the road. There's the nobody ever talks to each other ever again, but that's not this fork. My brothers and sisters really enjoyed the book, and my mother, who is still going strong at the age of, I shouldn't say, wait a second, but she's still going strong, and she loved it too. And I think there's a sense among all of them that capturing my father and capturing this world that we all knew so well, and doing it, with a sense of humor, I think, but also with a sense of appreciation, is going to be something that matters to our children and to our grandchildren. So it has the virtue of being a family document, and I showed it to everybody before it was published. They added some stories, and so they were a big help.
Well, it's such a beautiful, it's a wonderful book. It is called Cartoon County, My Father and His Friends in the Golden Age of Make-Believe, and the author, my guest, Cullen Murphy. Thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Gary, it's been great. Thank you so much.
Well, that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program, and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. I think you'll find a lot of past programs you missed that you'll really enjoy. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you subscribe to podcasts. And you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Cullen Murphy. His book is called Cartoon County, My Father and His Friends in the Golden Age of Make-Believe. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas and Ollie Jackson. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.